It's the Red Zone on Cards Radio 790 KRD, fueled by Thornton's.
Holy crap, I don't know who the hell we think we are.
My wife can score more than 2 buckets on 11 shots.
The kids are playing their tail off, and the coaches are screwing it up.
Go play intramurals, brother. Go play intramurals.
They're supposed to be mature adults, but they're really not. Who's the kid here? Who's the kid here? Are you kidding me?
Now here's your host, Nick Coffey.
All right, good Monday morning and welcome in here on a beautiful, beautiful morning. I can say that and really mean it because this is maybe the first time in a long time that I was right outside. I had to run to the car real quick before the show started today to grab something. So usually when I get here at like 5:45, 5:30, it just really depends. When I do get here, it's obviously still dark outside. And I guess I'm aware that as you move forward throughout the year, it does get lighter earlier on in the morning. But if you'd asked me last week, you know, hey, what's it look like outside? I just assumed it was dark, but it's beautiful. It's warm. Enjoy it because that weather that we had this weekend that was phenomenal. In fact, a little hot, but hey, I won't complain. It's all going away here soon. In fact, I just saw that we got rain on the way. And according to WDRB, we will have some storms move through Louisville this morning. And again, temperatures dropping into the 40s. So hopefully you all were able to enjoy a beautiful weekend. It was very nice outside. I spent the majority of it outside with my kids. And it was great. Thunder over Louisville, I didn't attend or watch any of like the you know, obviously the news stations covered. I didn't see it. I'm curious to see how many people watch it on television. I mean, that doesn't interest me, but maybe there are those that sit in front of their TV and watch fireworks. But look, I'm not going to rain on anybody's parade. I know a lot of people enjoyed Thunder. It says here that there were over 800,000 people that showed up on both sides of the Ohio River. So nearly 1 million people showed up to kick off Derby Festival here in 2022. Been a while since we've had anything normal this time of year, and everybody seemed to have a great time. I did see, though, in fact, some of you may know this. I'll give you the answer. Just think about it for a second. I've got a question to get the show started this morning for everybody listening. How many arrests do you think were made by police officers near Thunder, like downtown? I mean, you could really be set up anywhere near downtown and you're going to have a good view of it. But I guess just in the area there that was where the fireworks took off, I mean, I guess closer to the river. If you'd have asked me, hey, how many people do you think were arrested? I think I would have guessed like in the 20s or 30s. Not sure if that's because I just assume everybody down there is breaking the law. But keep in mind, a lot of folks that are there are there with their kids and probably aren't looking to party. But there's also a ton of people who go down there to party and rage. And that's kind of what it is for those people. I would have guessed a lot higher than the actual number. The actual number was 6. Only 6 people were arrested. So pat yourself on the back, Kentuckiana, for at least in my eyes, I overestimated the amount of people who would do foolish things and get themselves arrested. So, again, hopefully you guys had a great weekend. And, again, the cold weather is returning, which sucks. All right, you guys know the drill. We are fueled by Thornton's. Stop in this morning. There's nearly 50 Kentuckiana Thornton's locations, which means there's probably one close to you. Stop in, get yourself some breakfast. They've got a lot of options. Donuts, breakfast sandwiches. You need a cup of coffee, they've got you covered. Iced coffee, if that's your thing. And if you're not a Refreshing Rewards member, you should be. Go to RefreshingRewards.com or download the app today. And you're going to save money each time you fill up the gas tank. And you're going to be able to be a part of the many different sweepstakes that they have. And you could potentially become a big winner. Just to give you an example of all the great giveaways Thornton's has for their Refreshing Rewards members, they recently gave away a brand new Chevy Silverado. They last year, they gave out free fuel for an entire year to 200 people. Think about that. 200 people that were part of their rewards program got free fuel for an entire year. And my goodness, they're saving so much money right now because gas is, you know, stupid expensive. So again, we're fueled by Thornton's here in the Red Zone. I'm Nick Coffey, the marvelous Matt Allen, riding shotgun this morning. And I guess we'll start with some news that came out yesterday. And given the fact that it is the first commitment for Kenny Payne in the era that is the Kenny Payne era here at U of L, He landed his first player, and it's Tennessee transfer Brandon Huntley Hatfield, who committed following a visit this weekend. I guess he committed while on a visit. He was here Saturday and Sunday. May still be here now. I'm not really sure, but he is a former five-star prospect, top 25 player, spent one season at Tennessee, didn't have great stats, started 13 games, averaged about 4 points and three boards a game. And I got to admit, I actually thought he was much more productive. I guess I watched games where he did play a lot. I remember, he was a top 25 player, so he was a name I was familiar with. And coming out of high school, he chose Tennessee over Kansas, Kentucky, Louisville, Baylor, and Auburn. So, he had all kinds of offers. And I guess he played more early on during the year. But I remember watching this kid play against Kentucky in the SEC tournament game where Tennessee beat Kentucky, and he had a pretty good night. So, clearly didn't have necessarily the numbers you would have expected for a top 25 player, but a lot of potential. And as you likely have heard, Kenny Payne is believed to be really, really good at developing front court players, which that's got to make you excited given this kid just a year ago was a top 25 player. He's a 6'10 big, really athletic. I won't act like I've watched a ton of his game, but I did just watch some highlights yesterday. Looks like a guy that can face up and go around guys, got really good size, and again, he's just a freak athlete. So when it comes to the first commitment for Kenny Payne, I'd say it's a pretty good one. But I think the obvious observation right now is that they have a lot of front court players. Really, the only real natural guard on the roster right now is L. Ellis. I know Mike James can play on the wing, and he's a wing. He's certainly not a front court player, but again, he's also not a guard like L. Ellis, who is that can play the one and the two. I think you'll see Mike James mostly play the three, and I guess he could play the two depending on your lineup. So we'll still count him as a guard, but he's not, to me, he wouldn't be a ball handler, if that makes sense. He's more a 2-3 than he is a 1-2, obviously, like L. Ellis. So again, we'll be tracking this roster from now until it's official, and there's still a lot of spots to be had. So since we started the show last Friday, two more scholarships are off the board because, again, we found out at the end of the show Friday that Roosevelt Wheeler is coming back. That left you with six. Now you have Brandon Huntley Hatfield, so therefore you've got five scholarships to use, and there's still a ton of players in the portal, but one of the players that you were pursuing, that you were hosting on a visit this upcoming weekend, has since committed elsewhere. So Sean McNeil, the Kentucky native who played at West Virginia, he committed to Ohio State yesterday, so he's now off the board. And again, five spots to be had for Louisville this year, and you would think they're going to focus on guards, but I think Kenny Payne's just going after the most talented players out there, and I think that's fine by me. Obviously, you're going to have to figure out where you're going to get good guard play. But there's another recruit we'll talk about this morning, one of the top ranked kids in the 2022 class that is yet to pick a school, former LSU commit. Again, LSU lost their entire class this past a few weeks ago, whenever Will Wade was fired, whenever that was, and he had a good class coming in. So Julian Phillips is a five-star, 6'8" power forward that says Louisville is one of the schools pursuing him. Louisville was in to see him last week. He's from Branson, Missouri. Again, he's one of the, I think he's ranked as the 12th best player in the class. But again, he's another front court player. You also have Devin Ree, the other kid that was committed to LSU that has since visited Louisville. Sounds like he's going to make a decision next week. Louisville feels pretty good about that one from what I've been told. He is a guard, but more so a wing than a combo guard. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this roster comes together. And as you know, I refuse to give out any kind of expectation. Now, again, if you're somebody that says, look, I don't know who's going to be on the team, but I expect Kenny Payne to put together a roster that that is good enough to make the tournament in year one. So if that's where you are, I can't tell you that you're wrong in doing that. I get it. Louisville really under any last year, of course, was a nightmare type season. The year before that, you were right there with you were the last team that didn't get in. So you've now missed the tournament two consecutive seasons in years you could have made it, meaning there was no postseason ban. You just simply weren't good enough. So because that has led to us with a new era and a new coach, I will at least say this. I don't think it's wrong for fans to say that, look, I expect to just at least make the tournament. I don't think that's getting too far ahead of ourselves. But really, we can't even, like, again, I hear you, because I've had a lot of folks say that, that say, look, if Kenny Payne is as good as we believe he is at bringing in talent, and he can coach a little bit, making the tournament should be the minimum. And I hear you. But when it comes to, like, actually laying out expectations, what kind of season you're going to have, you have to know who's on the team, and we still don't really know that. So, again, there's another name out there we've talked about, Elijah Fisher from the 2023 class. Louisville is one of the many schools involved with him. He's a five-star player. There's still talk he could end up reclassifying to 2022. So there's all kinds of names out there and still five spots available. And we'll see. We've got to the end of this week. Well, whenever May 1st is, that's the deadline. So I'm curious to see, are we going to – will has the portal essentially – got as full as it's going to get, or will there be players that wait until the very end? Because the deadline to put your name in the portal and maintain eligibility for the next season is a week from yesterday. It's Sunday, May 1st. So I have a feeling we've probably seen there may be some more names that enter the portal throughout the week here. I guess that wouldn't shock me. But it also wouldn't shock me if you know, the guys have had this long, they know what they're doing. In fact, there's all kinds of guys over the weekend that made their decision about coming back or staying in college. And North Carolina gets back both their guards, RJ Davis, Caleb Love. This comes like a week or two after they got Baycott back. So clearly them making the run all the way to the championship game last year. And hell, they led by 15 at halftime. And they might have won that game had Baycott not gone down. So again, if you're wondering which team's going to get the most buzz this offseason as far as like the preseason number one team in the country, pretty sure it's going to be North Carolina. All right, so we got a lot we'll get into here this morning. DJ Wagner, he played up in, the Indianapolis area at the Nike EYBL event this past weekend, and it was quite a weekend for DJ Wagner. One, it's first time that I'm aware of that his father, DeJuan, openly talked about his son's recruitment. And there's a couple of things DJ Wagner said after his game on Friday that have to make you feel pretty good about where Louisville is. I mean, again, we know the predictions from the recruiting analysts are starting to come in and starting to flip to Louisville, which, you know, I'll admit that if those guys feel more confident in it, then that, you know, good. I mean, I'd rather see that than see it the other way around. I'd rather see the flipping to Louisville than, you know, Kentucky still having most of the predictions. But I don't think anybody really knows what this kid's going to do. But I'll admit, I'm at least now maybe getting a little ahead of myself and seeing that, you know, he's calling Kenny Payne like a family member. So, and we also need to get into some of the things DeJuan Wagner said about his father. DeJuan Wagner, of course, I think you know who he is, former college superstar, was one of the best high school players in America many years ago, played one season for Calipari at Memphis, and then had a pro career that didn't last very long. But he's the son of DJ Wagner. And he's the father of DJ Wagner, the son of Milt Wagner. Well, he had some comments about Milt joining Louisville staff. And I want to get into that a little bit because I do think there's some information that needs to be basically just to give you guys a heads up, what he said was Milt Wagner should have been on Louisville staff long ago, regardless of DJ Wagner ever being a potential recruit, just because of what he did for the school. And I think it made people assume there's this kind of like Louisville's not in good shape with the Wagner family. And I don't believe that's the case. So we can certainly get into that. And It's quite evident. In fact, we've already talked about it for a while now. This kid, DJ Wagner, he's gonna be one of the most talked about recruits ever around here. And if he makes a decision like this summer or maybe early in the fall, it may not seem like it because it's really just now heating up. Like if Kenny Payne was never hired and Chris Mack was still here, or maybe somebody else was hired, let's be clear, Louisville would not be even talking to DJ Wagner. I mean, they'd probably be going after him like everybody else, but I guess what I should say is Louisville fans, like, we wouldn't be on the edge of our seat waiting to see how this recruitment plays out because we know we wouldn't have a chance. So it won't, the buzz about Wagner and the talk about where he ends up going, it probably won't seem like it because, again, it's not like we've been doing it for you know, over a year, but it's going to be hot and heavy from now until when that kid makes a decision because he did say over the weekend there's still all kinds of other schools going after him. And I mean, even his dad made a joke that said, look, he could go to Auburn. Like, basically saying everybody just assumes it's going to be Louisville or Kentucky, but there's all kinds of other options out there. And they wanted everybody to know, hey, he's wide open. Everybody's recruiting him. However, let's be real. It's going to come down to Louisville and Kentucky, right? Like, if this kid ends up going elsewhere, I mean, I guess it could happen, but I don't see it playing out that way. So I feel anytime we talk recruiting, I feel like, oh, man, I know there are certain people that just do not care at all about recruiting. And I get it, but this is a big deal. This is the number one player in America, and it's going to be great for the rivalry. I mean, think about it. This rivalry, mostly because it's Louisville's fault, I mean, has stunk. Now, Louisville did win the last time the two teams played, which is great. But outside of that, there's not a whole lot I can tell you about during the Calipari era in Lexington that is a good look for Louisville in this rivalry. Well, Louisville's got some momentum right now. They haven't played a game. Kenny Payne hasn't coached a game yet, and he just landed his first player. But clearly, they're going to go after some of the best players in America. And if they start getting them over Kentucky, including this one here with DJ Wagner, a kid that has been believed to be a lock for Kentucky for years now, if Kenny Payne gets hired and lands this kid, I mean, it's not to say that automatically completely shifts all the momentum to Louisville, but it's going to be a big deal. And Calipari has taken some heat from his fan base for obvious reasons in recent last couple years, right? Two bad seasons for two different reasons. You flamed out in the tournament as a 2 seed to a 15 seed, most embarrassing loss maybe in your program's history. That was coming off of a year where you didn't make the tournament. You won 9 games. So not to say that losing DJ Wagner would be like the death nail to Calipari, but I'm curious to see really what the reaction would be from Kentucky fans in regards to Calipari. So again, we'll get into that this morning. There's all kinds of other stuff we need to talk about. The Reds finally won a game, so I'm sure Matt's happy. They snapped their what seemed to be a 2-week losing streak. So we probably won't get into that very much, but I did at least want to mention that, because if you're a Reds fan, you might not have even been paying attention, because they've been so bad lately. But they did win yesterday, so at least they stopped the bleeding. Something else we need to get into. We'll do this coming up on the other side, because I'm here for this. Sign me up for this becoming like the new norm when it comes to transfer portal and NIL. So one of the top guards in the country that's transferred is Nigel Pack, who played at Kansas State. He ended up committing to Miami over the weekend. And the news was broke by an attorney who, I guess, put together the legal contract for his NIL deal that got him to Miami. They had the best offer for him, the package, the NIL package for this young man. And look, Louisville didn't go after this kid to my knowledge, so that's why we didn't talk about him. But he is believed to be one of the top 2 or 3 players in the portal, and he's going to Miami. But the amount of money he got per season and the way the news was broke was just fascinating to me. Meaning, and so when I say I'm here for it, sign me up, I love the idea of these attorneys being the ones who break. Like, we have these attorneys that are that I guess work for companies that give players these NIL deals in order to, of course, I mean, you're buying players. That's what you're doing. You're allowed to do it now. And I just love the thought of there being like different, like, these different attorneys giving us Woj bombs. This guy's going to end up here, and this is the deal that he got. Because keep in mind, it really isn't our business what kind of money these guys get through NIL. And a lot of it is kind of, I mean, there's been a couple of deals that have made a lot of, like the kid that committed to Tennessee football, the quarterback, the high school kid, he had like an $8 million deal. So there are some deals that have been public as far as what certain players are getting to come back to school or maybe to transfer elsewhere or to commit to a kid out of high school. But again, as much as I do believe it's not really our business, now that I'm seeing some of these numbers, it's fascinating. It enhances the overall entertainment that is college basketball. NIL and the portal, it may lead to some of these coaches hanging it up early like we saw with Jay Wright last week. I mean, hell, they're not doing it publicly, but clearly they're reaching out to their former colleagues and the guys that work for the guys that work as analysts now. Jimmy Dykes, Dick Vitale, who else is it? Seth Greenberg, Dan Dockich, all those guys are every day on Twitter throwing out there, oh, this is making coaches' jobs so much more difficult. We're going to see the best coaches in the game just hanging up early because this is just, it's changed what the job is. Well, I don't care. To me, it's more entertaining, and I love it. So, again, we'll get into that and a lot more. I hope you guys stick with us. You are in the Red Zone, and we're fueled by Thorns. If you guys want to be a part of the show, we'd love to hear from you. Load up the text line, 502-653-0790. Again, 502-653-0790. That is the number. And again, we are fueled by Thornton's. That's the LNN Federal Credit Union text line, I should say.
Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD. Fueled by Thornton's. Share your thoughts on the LNN Federal Credit Union text line at 502-653-0790.
All right, 731 here on a Monday morning. You are in the Red Zone, and we are fueled by Thornton's on 790 KRD. Take us with you wherever you go with the iHeartRadio app. You can also listen live at 790KRD.com. I'm dragging a little bit this morning. I was up later than usual last night. There's this new show on Amazon Prime. It's called Outer Range. I think we briefly talked about it during Watch Wednesday. And I made the mistake because I like to binge watch shows. I can't remember the last show. I guess this is it. This is the most. But before this one, I can't remember a show that I watched that I was really into that I like had to wait for more episodes to come out. Like other than when like a new season debuts. But yeah, I started Outer Range. I guess last week early on, and it was a little slow and seemed to be really like sci-fi-y. That I'm sure that's not a word, but it seemed to have a sci-fi vibe to it, which isn't really my thing. But then I was on the treadmill, and of course I needed something to watch. So I stuck with it, and I've now watched four episodes, and it is so good. Hopefully it finishes strong. It's like, and I felt to myself like it reminded me of the show Leftovers on HBO. But I thought, you know what? Like, is that just me, or is that like a common thing? And sure enough, if you search Outer Range on Amazon Prime, I put in Outer Range and Leftovers, and there was a bunch of tweets of everybody that said I always forget the name of this show that's like super popular that's on Paramount, the Western show. Goodness gracious, with Costner, what is his name? Yellowstone. For some reason, I always forget the name Yellowstone. But it's Yellowstone meets Leftovers. Like, that's how somebody described it, and I thought that was the perfect description of it. So if you want to check, if you're looking for something good to watch, I would recommend it up to this point. Again, I can only speak for four episodes, but just know you got to wait. Like, every week they release two episodes. I know Amazon has done this with other shows before, but I've never watched them that way. Usually there's so much to watch that if that's how they're going to release a show, I just wait till it's all the way there, and then I can just binge it and, you know, watch it on my own time. But they've got me hooked. It's a really, really good show. So there you go. That's why, I mean, I was up way later than usual because there was another episode sitting there and I'm like, you know what? I can't go to bed. I got to watch it. I got to know what happens. I'm sure you guys have been there when it comes to streaming shows. All right, 502-653-0790 is the number if you guys would like to text in on the LNN Federal Credit Union text line. Before we get to the text line, we did talk earlier about the big news yesterday, Kenny Payne landing the first commitment of the Kenny Payne era. It is former five-star big man Brandon Huntley Hatfield, who started 13 games for Tennessee last year, averaged about 4 points and three rebounds. It looks like his playing time kind of – he played a lot early, then his minutes kind of dipped a little bit, and then he started to play a little bit more towards the end of the season before they got upset in the tournament against Michigan. But – here's a quote from Huntley Hatfield to On3 Sports. Quote, the connections Coach KP has, the connections Coach KP has is amazing, and I genuinely feel like he's being honest with me. While he was at Kentucky, he recruited and developed so many guys like me, guys that are where I ultimately want to get one day. I feel like he can help me in multiple ways. So coming out of high school, this kid had offers from just about everybody. He picked Tennessee over Kentucky and Kansas, Louisville, Baylor, Auburn. And then during the transfer process, he had already visited Auburn, and they were believed to be in really good shape for him. In fact, I was told that they had a pretty decent NIL package for him. And I don't know if Louisville gave him a better one or if he just really was – I mean, again, if you're a big guy, I know Kenny Payne's never been a head coach, but if you're – I mean, Kenny Payne has got a resume of developing big men that you could understand why a kid like Brandon Huntley Hatfield would love the thought of playing for Kenny Payne. But throughout the transfer process, I think Auburn was a real threat. And then Arizona State, SMU, and Wake Forest were set to get visits. And they never got him because he committed while here yesterday. So commitment number one of the Kenny Payne era. All right, this text on the Ellen and Federal Credit Union text line again, 502-653-0790. Thank you to who this text from 5096 is. I keep forgetting Kamari Lands is on the team. Well, he's not here yet, but Kamari Lands is a top 40-ish player that was committed to Chris Mack, and he decided to stay committed during the coaching change. And he is listed as a guard, a combo guard. So, you know, that you do have an – so when it comes to guard play, L. Ellis to me is still your only guard that I would label as a ball handler, like a guy that can run the show if need be. Mike James and Kamari Lands, I think, are more wings, but we'll see. I mean, Lands is believed to be a really good shooter. He's 6'8". I'm looking here at 24/7 Sports. They actually list him as a wing. So, again, thank you for reminding me of that he is, in fact, somebody that's on this team that will probably play, and he's a guy that you can put on the perimeter. But, again, you need to go get – and, look, I'm not telling anybody anything they don't already know. I think Kenny Payne and his staff clearly are aware that they need to add some guards here because they've got pretty much a loaded front court. And look, we'll see what happens with this other kid that we talked about a moment ago for those just now joining us. But, you know, there aren't many players left in the 2022 class. In fact, when it comes to kids that are, like, ranked very highly, there aren't many at all. And one of the – in fact, this kid may be – my computer is completely froze up here, so I'm going to have to reset it. But Julian Phillips is a five-star kid who was committed to LSU and decommitted whenever Will Wade got fired. He is – still uncommitted and is hearing from just about everybody. Again, we're talking about a guy who's ranked number 12 in the country. And he said over the weekend that Louisville was in to see him last week. So again, hard to know what to make of that as far as like where Louisville stands. Are they really in play? But they're at least going after the best players in the country, just like they told us they would. So again, they may be a little too late to the party to really get involved here and have a chance at this kid. But, I remember Nolan Smith said it whenever he was introduced, like, no, we're going to go after some of the best players in America. And that's going to be our plan. And so far, they're following the plan. We'll see if they can, again, we talked a lot late on Friday, just kind of how, you know, because Friday was the 5-week mark for the Kenny Payne, since Kenny Payne was hired, and they hadn't landed a player yet. And I thought I was pretty transparent in saying, I'm not panicked. I'm not worried. I know they're in on a lot of guys, and they're going to be able to fill these roster spots. But all I said was that I was just a little surprised that, yeah, after 5 weeks, I would have expected they had one, maybe two guys. Well, they have one now, and they'll be getting, hopefully they'll get some more here soon, because that'll give us the chance to actually start talking about what expectations should be in year one of Kenny Payne. All right, I'm glad somebody texted this in. Let me see if I can, well, now I got to reload the text line because I had to restart my computer. But the question was about DeJuan Wagner's comments, where he said, and I'm paraphrasing here, but he basically said that he's tired of the narrative that Louisville would have to hire Milt Wagner to land his son, because he believes that his dad has done enough for the University of Louisville to where he should have been hired long ago. Yeah, here's the Rick Bozich and Jody Dimling, all those guys were on site up in Indy this weekend to watch. I mean, I'm sure Jody would have been there regardless, but DeJuan Wagner and sort of what the storyline that's here within this rivalry, you're going to see people who don't normally cover recruiting that closely start to cover DeJuan or DJ Wagner, because again, we're talking about the number one player in America who's likely going to choose between Louisville or Kentucky. But Rick Bozich, this is from his Twitter account on Saturday, said, to clarify earlier, DeJuan Wagner strongly dislikes the narrative that putting Milt Wagner on the Louisville staff will swing DJ to the cards. He said his father is a Louisville legend and should have had a job at Louisville a long time ago. So the question that that came in was, and I'll read it word for word. DJ Wagner or DeJuan Wagner's comments made it sound like he didn't feel too strongly about Louisville. Do you know if Denny ever tried to hire Milt when DeJuan was coming up? I don't know the answer to that question. I assume that they didn't, but I don't know. I mean, clearly Calipari brought on. I mean, that was Milt's first job in coaching, to my knowledge, as far as coaching in college basketball. And let's be real, he did it so he could get DeJuan Wagner, and it worked. DeJuan Wagner was a superstar. So I guess, are you insinuating? Are you asking? Should Denny have done that instead? And look, I read a really good column by Bozich, who kind of took us back in time in the early 2000s whenever Juwan Wagner was the number one player in America out of Camden, New Jersey. I remember it making national news when he scored 100 points in a game. And apparently what really soured – now, again, if Milt was already on staff when Juwan was like, you know, a junior in high school or even during his senior season, at that point, the writing's on the wall. You know where he's going. His dad got a job at Memphis, so therefore he's going to go to Memphis. So I'm not really sure. Again, I was a lot younger. I mean, I remember Wagner, and I remember the Louisville connection, knowing that Milt played at Louisville. But, like, I can't go back in time and tell you what happened in the recruitment. But apparently what's one of the things that soured Juwan Wagner and Louisville, it wasn't just the fact that his dad was getting a job at Memphis, or maybe he was already employed at Memphis, but there was a teammate of Wagner's. And again, Rick Bozich had a really good article about this over at WDRB that kind of laid out the scenario where there was a guy named Arthur Barclay, who was Juwan Wagner's best friend, a 6'8 big guy, who was also a pretty good player, but not nearly the level of a player that Wagner was. Like, I don't think he had anywhere near the offers. Probably a guy that would have played college basketball, probably maybe even at a high level, but he wasn't garnering the attention that Wagner was, because Wagner was the number one player in America. So essentially, Calipari not only hired Juwan Wagner's dad, he also offered his best friend a scholarship. This guy, Barclay, ended up going to Memphis and never really did anything, never played much. But, I mean, it was pretty obvious, I suppose, at the time that Calipari was going to do whatever he needed to do to get Juwan Wagner, hiring his dad, offering his best friend a scholarship, and it worked out because, again, Wagner ended up becoming a legend. And really, I could be wrong. I know Marcus Camby, of course, played for Calipari at UMass, but pre-Juwan Wagner, it was a long time ago. We're talking 20 years. Pre-Juwan Wagner, I don't remember Cal getting, you know, a recruit that was thought that high of. So, yeah, it works. So to answer your question, I don't know what Juwan Wagner feels about Louisville, but clearly, like, if Milt gets a job here at U of L and he joins Kenny Payne's staff, I mean, I just can't imagine a scenario where you would hire Milt Wagner and Louisville's chances don't get better to land DJ Wagner. And you probably have seen it. So I should have mentioned this earlier, but DJ Wagner over the weekend, when he played, apparently was just as impressive as usually is. Those that were there were raving about how good he looks. But there's a video that leaked, and I don't know any of the details or I don't know what happened, but somebody posted a video of what appears to be him getting in a fight after a game outside of where they were playing. And it turned into like a brief little melee, didn't last too long. But then the following day, he did not play in his AAU team's game. So I don't know what happened, or they're not really, I mean, again, no clue, but yeah, you'll probably hear about a DJ Wagner video today, or maybe you'll see it for yourself, and I have no details about it, but I assume that's why he didn't play yesterday, because a lot of coaches were there to watch him again yesterday in Indy, but he was not suited up, and I assume it was because of that. But I could be wrong. Maybe it's an injury. I don't know. But just the Louisville connections to this whole recruitment are wild. You know, I forgot. I totally forgot. It's a huge, and again, I don't know if this helps Louisville or not because of his situation, but I totally forgot Purvis Ellison is his AAU coach. Like, Purvis Ellison coaches this New Jersey Scholars Club that not only has DJ Wagner, but some of the other players on that team are believed to be like top 15. Hell, there's some people that think one of DJ Wagner's teammates may claim the number one spot over him before it's all said and done. So Milt getting on the staff, I mean, would that repair the Purvis Ellison U of L relationship? Which, again, I don't even know what that. All I know is the guy doesn't really show up whenever they want him to come back, has never really embraced Louisville. But also, I don't know of any, like, real bad blood. To me, when Purvis's name comes up, it's more of like, what happened? Like, why is he so distant? Why doesn't he come back more often? He's a legend. I don't know of any instance where he's talked badly about Louisville. I don't. Now, he did make that comment last summer about Chris Mack not reaching out to him to talk to DJ Wagner, which just led to a whole, really created a situation that didn't need to be created. Louisville did go after him. They stopped getting any response. They had a Zoom call with DJ Wagner when Mack was here, and they were going to recruit him, and they wanted to recruit him, and then it was quite clear he wasn't interested in Louisville. And now he is, of course, because of the obvious change. All right, let's get to a quick timeout. We'll come back on the other side. I want to take a look at this. This fascinated me. Hopefully it fascinates you as well. But there's a recent study here that tells us the amount of time, the average commute time by state. And you guys are probably sitting in your car right now. Maybe you're in traffic. I don't know. Maybe you just got to work. But I'll tell you where we rank as a state and as a city as far as the average commute time. Because if you're somebody that thinks you got it bad here, not nearly as bad as it could be elsewhere. So we'll get to that and a lot more. 502-653-0790 is the LNN Federal Credit Union text line. Don't go anywhere. You are in the Red Zone. Again, we're Fueled by Thornton's right here on 790 KRD.
You're in the Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD. Fueled by Thornton's. Share your thoughts on the LNN Federal Credit Union text line at 502-653-0790.
All right, so this is according to 24/7 Wall Street. They did a study to show the list of states that have the longest commutes. And according to the U.S. Census Bureau, overall, the average commute time in the United States is 26.9 minutes, or about 4.5 hours a week. I would never think of it when it comes to hours. But Kentucky, among the 50 states, Kentucky ranked 34th. In regards to average commute time, which means our commute is much shorter than most. 23.7 minutes is the average amount of time it takes people in Kentucky to get to where they go in the morning. I assume that's work. It says here the percentage of commuters that drive alone, 81.2, which is the 11th highest. So most people that leave each day to go to work in the state of Kentucky, Louisville included, drive by themselves, which honestly I would have guessed higher than 81.2%. It says here that only 9.2% of commuters carpool and 0.9% of commuters use public transit here in the state of Kentucky. I thought this broke down by city, but it doesn't. It just lists states. But the states with the longest commutes, no surprise, it's states that feature that have some of the biggest cities on the planet. New York, number one. Maryland, number two, and that has to be because of Washington, D.C., and I've never been to Washington, D.C., but I have heard nightmare stories about how bad traffic is there. New Jersey's number three. I think that also is because of New York City. Massachusetts, number four. I guess that's Boston and the traffic you sit in there. California, number five. Assume that's because of many big cities in that humongous state, mostly L.A. Illinois, number six. I'd say that's because Chicago. Seven has to be because Georgia 7, and it has to be because of Atlanta. And then Virginia, I suppose, is also D.C. Washington State is number 9. Wouldn't have guessed that. So, yeah, we don't have it so bad. Anytime there's you hit your rush hour traffic around this area, but, like, it's never anything as bad, at least for me. And maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like even those that do sit in the daily rush hour traffic around 5 o'clock, I mean, rarely are you ever just a complete standstill unless there's some kind of an accident, right? Like, there are other places in America, like these big cities, that there's traffic nonstop. It takes you forever to get anywhere, and it's not because of accidents. I mean, that just makes it worse when that actually happens, but it's just because there's so many people. We don't deal with that. In fact, I don't know what to compare it to because I've lived here my whole life, but and look, I know my way around, right? Like, I know where I'm going. So maybe that's why it seems this way, but I feel like you can get anywhere in Louisville in a relatively quick amount of time. I mean, that's just me. And it is nice, though, because I was thinking about it when I'm looking at these numbers. I mean, my average, I don't live that close to where I work. I mean, I'm not far, but I'm not that close. But in the mornings, I mean, I get here, no joke, I feel like I get here in like 11 to 12 minutes. Like, that's how, because there's no traffic, it's super early. Rarely hit any lights. It's a straight shot on the expressway. So if you are sitting in traffic right now, I feel for you because traffic sucks. You don't have any control, but it could be worse because, again, other cities have it a lot worse than us. In fact, even Lexington has apparently worse traffic per capita than us because I don't know if it's poorly constructed roads. I don't know, but you can go look it up online. There's all kinds of studies that show as far for the population in Lexington, they are one of the worst cities in America when it comes to traffic. All right, we still got a couple more hours to go, and I thought to myself, hey, with it being late April, like, do Do we talk NBA playoffs? And we can, because I think there are a couple of storylines with the Brooklyn Nets looking like they've got no shot to win this series down 3-0. Ben Simmons is not going to play tonight, and a lot of people have comments on that. Sucks for the Suns because they're now tied with the Grizzlies or with the Pelicans 2 apiece. And this was one of the great seasons. I mean, the Suns had a phenomenal year, number one seed, right? But Devin Booker goes down. He may be out a couple more weeks. Like, it would really suck if the Suns' season comes to an end because of that injury. But it looks like it could happen. The Pelicans look like they could win this series without Devin Booker on the floor. So I was going to say, I feel like the playoffs have been pretty blah thus far. Usually the first round is. But I don't know, maybe it's because I'm just not betting. If I was betting and following along closely, maybe I'd find it more interesting. But I just haven't kept up with it as much as I thought I would. But we can certainly dive into that. So again, we got 2 more hours to go. Hope you stick around. Take us with you wherever you go with the iHeartRadio app. You can also listen live at 790KRD.com. Again, you are in the Red Zone, and we are Fueled by Thorntons.
You're in the Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790KRD, Fueled by Thorntons.
That's right. Hour number two here on a Monday morning. You are in the Red Zone, and we are Fueled by Thorntons. My name is Nick Coffey, the marvelous Matt Allen alongside today. Take us with you wherever you go. iHeartRadio app, listen live at 790KRD.com. I was just chatting with Tony Cruz and Tony Vannetti, the two Tonys. Tony's here earlier this morning, Vannetti, that is. And they were talking about Thunder. Of course, we had our Thunder broadcast on News Radio 840 WHS like we have every year. And they said it was a great event. And I asked, you know, was it record crowd? And they said not even close. So what I saw was about 800,000 people on both sides of the river. I wouldn't even know what the record crowd is. And it's also one of those things that even if they told me it was a record crowd, I would just believe them. But I would also know there's no way for you to know that, right? Like, you're not counting people. And you can experience Thunder from all kinds of different places. Like, if you're on your balcony in Louisville, or even in, like, Butchertown or something, like, if you're on your balcony in that area or a rooftop in one of those buildings, which I know a lot of folks who have access to those buildings and they have their own parties up there on the roofs, and that's got to be a fun way to do it. But, like, if you do that, did you really go to Thunder? Do you count in the group of 800,000 people that technically went to Thunder? But regardless of it not being a record crowd, it was awesome. And, I don't know how it worked out this way, and I'm not complaining, but every year that Thunder has been to go off as scheduled pre-pandemic, I had to work as one of those guys who roams the man on the street interviews. Like, hey, is this your first Thunder? Do you like fireworks? Which I'm not very good at those kind of things, but I've done that for Derby and I've done it for Thunder since I've been here at iHeart. Now, again, we haven't had a normal Thunder in a long time, but this year I didn't get asked to do it, and I didn't, like, volunteer. Like, hey, I wasn't informed. So I don't know if they just forgot about me, or maybe it's that they realized after years of doing it that I don't add anything to the broadcast. I'm not very good at those roaming reporter interviews. What I do try to find, though, is the drunkest person that I think is actually, you know, coherent, that'll actually, you know, talk and not curse and actually be able to hold it together. That's much easier to do when you're at Churchill Downs because everybody wants to talk to you. But they also, you know, you got idiots that don't realize you're not live on the radio. Like, I'm recording this. You can say whatever you want and try to be funny, but if you say something stupid, we're obviously not going to play it. So thank you for not asking me to work Thunder. I'm sure I would have enjoyed myself down there with my colleagues, but it was nice to have a weekend with family. And as someone who every year that I get older, I get more and more freaked out by huge crowds like that. So it's probably best to keep me away. But anyways, if you did go to Thunder, I hope you had a good time because you had great weather in the mid-80s, sunshine. Sounds like it was awesome. And Derby time is officially here. I didn't even realize it. I guess as a Louisvillian, a lifelong Louisvillian, I should know this. But I didn't realize that Thunder was essentially the kickoff to Derby season. So let's do this. It's here. It's awesome. Our first normal Derby in quite some time. All right, if you are just now joining us, we did talk about some breaking news yesterday. Kenny Payne landed his first commitment as Louisville's head coach. It is Brandon Huntley Hatfield, a former five-star kid out of Clarksville, Tennessee, who played one season at Tennessee before deciding to transfer. And he did not have impressive numbers. There's no way around that, but He is still a guy that even in the I won't claim to have watched Tennessee basketball up close this year, but I did see him play at least a few times. And every time I watched him, he played. I guess I just happened to watch those games where he was getting good minutes and actually playing pretty well. He played really good against Kentucky in their game in the SEC tournament. But he put his name in the portal after his playing time kind of dropped a little bit. He did start 13 games. So I don't know if you want to call him a project. I mean, I think he's a guy that again, when given opportunity last year, he actually looked solid. But clearly, this is a guy who's the excitement is based off of his upside. He was believed to be one of the top 25 players in America coming out of high school. And obviously, Kenny Payne and his track record for developing front court players, that stood out to Brandon Huntley Hatfield, and he is the first to ever commit to Kenny Payne here at Louisville. So right now, with Roosevelt Wheeler announcing on Friday that he's coming back, and Huntley Hatfield yesterday committing, you now have five scholarships to fill. And when you look at who you have to work with as of now, I think it's quite obvious that they need guards. They need guards. But they are still going after other front court players. And some may scratch their head and say, why would you do that? You got enough. You've got a ton of bigs, which is true. But if you can land one of the top 15 players in America, regardless of position, you're going to do it. Because when it comes to the 2022 class, Julian Phillips is let me see where he's ranked. But he is one of, in fact, I'm going to look this up so I don't get it wrong. But I'm pretty sure of the recruits in the 2022 class, I'm pretty sure Julian Phillips is the highest ranked kid that is not currently committed to a school. Yeah, sure enough, he is. He's number 12 in the country in the 24/7 sports composite rankings. He's a 6'8 big from Branson, Missouri. And he said over the weekend, and I could be wrong, I don't think Kenny Payne likes to keep secrets. He said that he wants to keep things under wraps, and he's doing it because I don't think anybody had, and if they did, I'll stand corrected and I'll give them credit. But I did not know that Louisville was even looking at this kid. But it also makes sense. They got a lot of scholarships to fill, and Kenny Payne and Nolan Smith told us right out of the gate they're going to go after some of the best players in America, and apparently they were in to see Julian Phillips last week. No clue where he is in his recruitment because, again, we're talking about the best player in America that's left from the 2022 class. So, therefore, he's obviously got, you know, a lot of schools pursuing him. And it says here that, his list of schools that are the schools he said that he's hearing from right now. He told Travis Branham of 24/7 Sports that USC, Louisville, Auburn, Kansas State, and Tennessee have all been in to see him within the last week. So fingers crossed. We know nothing really about where this kid stands, so I don't want to get anybody's hopes up. But again, we're talking about just over the weekend, this kid telling 24/7 Sports, these are the schools that have been in to see me, which I assume means these are the schools that would, that want me the most. And keep in mind, Louisville's in a rare situation. They got five spots to fill. There are a lot of schools out there right now, they don't have any spots to fill. They already have their roster all together because they either had a regular-sized recruiting class coming in or maybe they added a couple in the portal. So, you know, I'm sure a lot of schools would love to have this kid, but not everybody has scholarships to use right now. All right, 502-653-0790. That is the LNN Federal Credit Union text line. Members get more at LNN FCU. FCU, you can open an account today at lnfcu.com. All right, so we had somebody text in earlier asking, you know, what can be done about Tyler Harrell and Alabama's tampering. So I don't remember if this, I think this actually came out on Friday. Maybe it was Thursday. I'm not sure. But as expected, Tyler Harrell, quickly after entering the portal, visited Alabama and has committed to Alabama. And I feel like a fraud saying I know that they tampered because I don't have a clue what happened. But before he actually entered the portal, rumors started to surface on social media, on message boards that said, hey, Alabama's trying to take one of Louisville's players. And then, of course, he ends up entering the portal and going to Alabama. So I think we can connect the dots here that somebody at Alabama probably let Tyler Harrell know through probably a third party that, hey, we need some help at receiver. We watched you in the spring game. We've watched you at U of L. And if you put your name in the portal, we'd love to have you. And technically, it's shady. I guess if that's not tampering, I know what you're asking, what is tampering? But I'm pretty sure you're allowed to do that. Like, is there a rule, like an actual NCAA rule, that would get Alabama in trouble for one of their staffers to call Tyler Harrell's? I mean, keep in mind, Tyler Harrell's high school down in Miami probably has players that Alabama recruits regularly, right? So it can easily be done. This is just the world we're in now, that Alabama's staff tells his high school staff, hey, you still have contact to this kid you coached, because just let him know if you do, we'd love to have him. Hell, there was a story in The Athletic last year around this time, you know, when the portal became a real thing, that high school coaches were telling reporters, yeah, I get contacted about kids that used to play for me more than I get contacted about kids that currently play for me. So I just don't think there's anything you can do about it. And it sucks because Bama, Nick Saban just decided, I want one of your best players and I'm going to have him. And that's exactly what he did. But am I the only one that, because it's Bama, it'd be worse if it was like Ole Miss or something. Because it's Bama, I think what makes it not, again, I hate to see this kid leave because he's got speed you just don't see very often. And he didn't catch many passes last year, but hell, half the ones he caught, he ended up in the end zone because he has that breakaway separation speed that literally is just like something we've, I mean, I can't think of a guy that, I don't want to be hyperbolic here, but like there were times where he created separation so quickly that, I mean, I feel like he's one of the fastest players I've ever seen play at U of L. So that sucks to lose him, but because it's Bama, I kind of just, I guess I chalk it up as, what are you going to do? Because I do believe this, if the NIL world didn't exist the way it does, because apparently NIL is what persuaded him to actually leave, because U of L tried to keep him with an NIL deal. I don't know who was involved in that, but there was a they knew that Alabama was coming after him, and they did everything they could to keep him, but they couldn't. So if NIL didn't exist and the transfer portal didn't exist, I doubt Tyler Harrell would have left. But you could also talk yourself into the scenario where he would have, because it's Alabama. Like, he might have sat out a year and said, look, if I got a chance to go play in Tuscaloosa under Nick Saban, I'll sit out a year, maybe 2 years, because it's Alabama. And last I checked, they have an NFL factory down there in Tuscaloosa. So, look, it sucks. There's no way around it. I think it's obvious something happened, but did they actually break a rule? I don't. Look, there's ways around it. There's ways to get around the rules. I mean, you're not supposed to technically buy players with NIL, right? But that's what's happening. In fact, we talked a lot about this last week, and I'll reiterate, but NIL, this may sound, you know, corny, but Pat Forty, I'll give him credit. He wrote a really good column at Sports Illustrated that I totally agreed with. NIL was created for situations like the one we saw last week with Oscar Tshiebwe. That's a guy who literally earned every bit of his marketability on his own. Yeah, playing for Kentucky helps. That's a big brand in college basketball, but he went out there and won National Player of the Year unanimously, and that, of course, leads to him having a big following and a lot of value with NIL, and he got paid. Apparently, he's going to make about $2 million, so that's a good story of NIL. And look, I think NIL is great all around, so trust me, I'm not anti-NIL, but there are people that say, hey, if we get into buying players, it's going to make the rich get even richer. But my argument is that those schools that you claim are the rich, they already have an advantage even if there's not NIL, because they can offer more when it comes to the experience of playing at those schools, right? So, like, there may be some schools that don't have, like, for example, let's talk about Miami. Like, Miami is Miami. Like, it's one of the, I mean, going to college and living in Miami probably seems like a pretty enticing thing to a lot of high school stars, college basketball, college football, whatever. So they've done all right at landing talent in recent years, but now they apparently are one of these schools that they have a lot of wealthy donors who are willing to put up big money for players. And Manny Diaz is there now for football. Jim Larrañaga's always recruited pretty well, and apparently they've always cheated, it sounds like, and now it's not illegal. You can do it. So there'll be some schools that probably do in fact really bring in talent that they didn't used to bring in. But let's be real. The Kentuckys in basketball, the Dukes in basketball, the Kansas, like, those schools are still going to probably land the same caliber players they were landing before NIL. They're now just going to be compensating them, or somebody's going to be a donor or somebody doing it through like a collective. So I don't think we're going to see a big shift. Like, how are these schools going to compete? Well, they already had a tough time competing before NIL anyway. Like they weren't like kids who go to Duke or Kentucky on an NIL deal, or Louisville for that matter. Those guys probably still would have went to those same schools even in the pre-NIL era. So I love it. And this fascinated me, and I hope we see more of this, but I'm not sure if we will, because so far a lot of these NIL deals have been private, but this one was not. So the let's see here. Yeah, this there's an attorney, Alex Ruiz. He tweeted out, breaking news. And he tagged LifeWallet, which I guess they are a company that has an affiliation with Miami. LifeWallet is proud to announce Nigel Pack has officially committed to UM as a basketball player. This is the biggest LifeWallet deal to date. And this guy who transferred, he's from Indy. He transferred from Kansas State to Miami. And he is getting a two-year deal for $800,000, totaling $400,000 per year. Plus, he is also getting a vehicle. And I mean, I'm not bothered by that. I mean, there are some people that, and I just can't relate because I don't get it. Like, why this kid making that much money and him getting a car, like, why that bothers you? I don't know. But I know it does bother some people. But if somebody's willing to pay him, technically that is what he's worth. I mean, it's pretty simple. You are worth what somebody is willing to pay you because, by definition, they've proven that worth by giving you that. Now, again, it could be a bad investment. The kid could stink. But my point is, like, I know there are people that don't like this, but I find it fascinating. And I don't think it's any of our business what kind of money these guys make. And it's really not that important because fans just want to win games. And if deals are being made to get high-caliber players there to get your team wins, then it's all good. But I would love to know. I wish it was, like, public record. Again, it's not our business, but I wish we could see, like, okay, this kid – who transferred from here to go there, here's what he got. I find it fascinating, and I wouldn't be shocked if we continue to see attorneys be the ones that put this out there. But $400,000 per year at Miami, the question now is, like, if that's the going rate to get Nigel Pack, who's a fine player. I mean, I'm not going to act like I've watched Kansas State basketball a whole lot because I did not. But this is a guy who averaged 17 points per game last year as a sophomore for Kansas State. He's a 6-foot guard, shot about 45%. So again, he's believed to be one of the top ranked freshmen or the top ranked guys that were available in the portal. So if the going rate is $400,000 per season for Nigel Pack, you got to think, okay, well, what's the going rate for Sean McNeil, who, by the way, Louisville was recruiting, and he is now committed to Ohio State. We did talk about that earlier. So when it comes to monitoring the names that potentially could be guys that come here and fill these spots that Kenny Payne has, you can take Sean McNeil off the list. He was the West Virginia transfer, and he was supposed to visit Louisville this upcoming weekend, but that visit did not happen because he committed to Ohio State while he was visiting in Columbus. So I would have loved to have seen Louisville land him. He's not like a game-changing kind of player, but he's a really good piece. Good veteran shooter. Savvy player, knows who he is, doesn't try to do anything outside of his game, but he decided to go to Ohio State. So maybe there's a new name that we see surface. And again, I talked about this late last week. You know, for me, when it comes to expectations, it really comes down to what caliber players you get in the portal. Now, I've since learned maybe they could get this Julian Phillips kid. Maybe they can get Elijah Fisher from the 2023 class, who's a 5-star they could potentially reclassify to his original class of 2022. I mean, if that's the case, you're then adding two young guys. So maybe the portal wouldn't be as much of a factor in your roster. But if they end up getting, you know, I don't want to say high caliber players, because keep in mind, the guys that you bring back, that can kind of be the core of your team. Now, again, you're still really thin at guard. But if their roster is filled, the final spots on this roster go to guys that played at, like, Duquesne or a JUCO kid, because they are looking at a JUCO kid, Cassius McNeely, who committed to Danny Manning when he was at Maryland. If those are the kind of guys they get instead of, you know, other high-profile guys in the portal or those two freshmen I just mentioned, one that is going to be a freshman, Julian Phillips, and the other, Fisher, who may reclassify, that to me is the biggest factor in how we assess expectations. Because if you bring in a lot of talent and you have some pieces and, you've got the guys you wanted back are back from last year's team, then I think you can say, okay, yeah, this team could actually be pretty good. But if their backcourt is L. Ellis and a lot of guys who just haven't played at a high level in college basketball, That doesn't guarantee that they're going to be underwhelming and that they're going to struggle, but like, that's a factor, right? You've had some guys come in. I mean, Carlick Jones, and probably, you know, going way back before the portal was a thing, but I guess before the portal era, you just had the grad transfers, which was mostly guys from smaller schools that had an extra year that would transfer up. And Damian Lee is an all-timer when it comes to how it translated. He was just as good at Louisville as he was Drexel. And then I think Christian Cunningham also was a guy that was that didn't have a tough – he had some moments, but he really overall didn't have an extremely tough time in adjusting. And then, of course, Carlick Jones was one of the best players in the ACC. But other than that, there have been some guys that have come in that were fine. Like Trey Lewis was a pretty good player. But then you had guys like Tony Hicks and Fresh Kimball, who actually played in the A-10, which is not a, you know, it's not exactly a mid-major. And then, of course, last year, Mason Faulkner, Jared West. I mean, so for me, and look, I could be wrong. They could get a guy, who knows? It's a crapshoot. They could get a guy that plays at a school I've never heard of, and he might come in and actually be pretty damn good. You really just never know. But for me, when it comes to expectations in year one of Kenny Payne, not only does it depend on who fills those final spots that you have, it's what caliber transfer are you getting. And we just don't know yet. I'm sure there'll be more names that surface this week that Louisville's reaching out to because, again, they need to fill these spots. And by the time we get to Sunday, May 1st, that's where the portal is going to be as full as it's going to get because that's the deadline. If you haven't put your name in the portal by May 1st, you will not be eligible to play next season if you transfer after May 1st. All right, quick timeout. We'll come back on the other side, talk about DJ Wagner a little bit. We have some quotes from over the weekend where he talked about Kenny Payne. And, you know, somebody asked an interesting question that I want to revisit. I know we've already talked about it a little bit, but somebody asked who really has more pressure to land DJ Wagner. Is it Calipari in Kentucky or is it Kenny Payne at Louisville? And I think there's one important factor we need to see play out before we can answer that question. All right, if you want to text in, you can do it. 502-653-0790. That is the LNN Federal Credit Union text line. You are in the red zone, and we are fueled by Thornton's here on 790 KRD.
You're in the red zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD, fueled by Thornton's. Share your thoughts on the LNN Federal Credit Union text line at
502-653-0790. Swinging a ground ball to third, backhand pickup Riddle. Long throw in time, and that's it. Reds win it 4-1, salvaging the final game of this series against the Cardinals.
I have a buddy who lives in the Cincinnati area, and he's a big Cardinals fan. And he went to the game yesterday, and I assumed he thought, yeah, I mean, not only am I going to get a chance to see my team play, they're likely going to win because the Reds haven't won a game in 2 weeks, and they end up losing and breaking that streak. So the Reds win 4-1, and they went 11 straight games without winning. And in that stretch of the 11 straight games that they lost those games by a combined score of 68-20. And they only had a lead for 18 pitches of those games. And, of course, they were sitting with a 2-13 record at that point, worst record in baseball. But, hey, don't let them get hot. They got one win now, and we'll see what they can do. It did make matters worse that Nick Castellanos, who played for them and was, I thought, seemingly a fan favorite last year, and I don't know how good the Reds actually ended up being. I know they were underwhelming once again, but they had moments at least last year. They were clearly more competitive a year ago than they've been thus far in 2022, and Castellanos was like one of their favorite players, and kind of hard to let him go, it sounds like. At least that's the way they made it seem. But he did an interview over the weekend where he said he never even got a call from him. Now, he opted out of his deal, I guess, and they could have pursued him, and they just didn't want to because, you know, obviously the market was going to be really good for him, and they decided to let him walk. And that's just got a sting for Reds fans because, again, he was one of the – to me, he seemed like one of the fan favorites, and to know that he wanted to be there, but the Reds just didn't want to pay him, that's got a sting. But, yes, the Reds finally snapped their losing streak, so – I'm a fake Reds fan. I know a lot of you guys out there are legitimate Reds fans. And the only reason I say I'm fake is because, like, they're the team that I have decided to hitch my wagon to just because I know so many people that are Reds fans. I'm like, why not, you know, join in with them? But, like, you all clearly are bothered. If you're a fan and you're bothered and you are sad when they lose, I can't say that it affects me much. But I do hope they can somehow salvage this season. But it doesn't look like they have a real good shot of doing that. All right, so we had somebody ask the question earlier, and it's a good question. We've already kind of talked about it a little bit, but it's probably something that we're going to reset from now until this is over. And when I say this is over, I mean when DJ Wagner's recruitment is over. So the question was, who has more pressure to land DJ Wagner? Is it John Calipari or is it Kenny Payne? And I've always said, well, it's Calipari. I mean, this is what he does. He lands top players. The expectation from Kentucky and their fans has been that DJ Wagner is going to be theirs, right? Because of the obvious connections. He coached DJ Wagner's son at Memphis, and they have a family-like bond. I mean, they are family. Cal's like a second dad to DeJuan Wagner. So for years now, it's just been assumed that if DJ Wagner goes to college, he's going to go to Kentucky. So Kenny Payne getting the job at Louisville, and now it appearing to be a real thing that he could come to Louisville, I think the pressure's on Cal. But with that said, if Milt Wagner joins the Louisville staff, does that change things? Because if you the thought of you hiring Milt Wagner and then DJ Wagner not coming, I mean, I think that'd be a bad look. Am I wrong? And look, they think they can get DJ Wagner without hiring Milt. I still think there's a chance Milt ends up becoming the third assistant coach. We'll see. Maybe it happens soon. I don't know. Maybe it's somebody else. But they have given some kind of a hint. Danny Manning said it, and Kenny Payne said it, that when it comes to building the staff, he wants to have guys that, and I think his own words were that he wants to hire coaches that can say they've been able to do everything that these college basketball players are trying to do. And, you know, Milt won a championship at U of L, won a championship in the NBA. I'd say every one of these guys that is pursuing professional basketball would love to have that on their resume. So that could have been a hint that it's going to be Mill, but maybe it's somebody else. I really don't know. And I don't think anybody who tells you they know really knows, because Kenny even admitted as much that he's trying to keep things under wraps. So, I know DeJuan Wagner. And DeJuan Wagner, I have no issue with anything that he said over the weekend. And if you guys missed it, he was asked about Milt Wagner, his father, potentially joining the staff at U of L and what it could do for the recruitment of his son. And he was irritated. He claimed, in fact, I'm going to go read the, this is from Rick Bosich's Twitter. It says, to clarify the earlier tweet, DeJuan Wagner strongly dislikes the narrative that putting Milt Wagner on the Louisville staff will swing DJ Wagner to the cards. Said his father is a Louisville legend and should have had a job at Louisville long ago. He is a Louisville legend. Now, should he have had a job at Louisville long ago? I don't know. I mean, he hasn't been coaching since 2014, I don't believe. So he's been away from the game for a while. But, somebody asked a good question earlier. Did Denny ever try to hire Milt before Cal did? And I don't know the answer to that question. I really don't. So I have no problem with DeJuan saying that because it's his dad. I'd probably say the same thing. But let's be real. Adding Milt Wagner to the Louisville staff would, in fact, impact your son's recruitment, right? I mean, I know that because there were a lot of folks that initially would say, would you really hire Milt Wagner, who hasn't been an assistant coach in quite some time? He's 60 years old. Do you really think he'd be the right hire if it gives you the number one player in America? It's just one player. Is it worth putting him on the staff for one guy? And I'll say yes. I'll say yes, because we'll never know. Maybe Wagner comes here and he's not as good as advertised. I doubt that's the case because everybody seems to think he's the real deal. But getting DJ Wagner and him having a phenomenal first year here, like let's say DJ Wagner comes to Louisville, and let's say Louisville's a good team, Elite Eight caliber, but he is this sensational freshman, like a Trey Young, like a Anthony Davis or something. That's setting the bar high. But again, we are talking about the number one player in America. So, yeah, he's just one guy. But if you get him and he's as good as advertised, you know what that's going to do? It's going to give you a much better shot of getting more guys like him. You have to be able to show, you know, you got to have a profile of landing highly ranked freshmen that can come in and be stars and get to the NBA and make money through NIL. So, yeah, I think you would do it because he could be a game changer for your program, and I don't mean just one season. Like, there are certain – this is going to sound corny, but there are certain recruits that give you a level of buzz that it really gives your program the cool factor, right, where – you're landing kids that, like, damn, Louisville's got this kid who's already sort of a superstar before he – like, when's the last time Louisville landed – I mean, I could tell you the last time they landed a really top-ranked guy. I mean, the highest-ranked player to commit to Louisville in recent years is Sam Williamson, and I'm not going to – you know, we don't need to comment on his situation because I think we all know that obviously didn't pan out very well. But before that, the last time Louisville was even in on guys the caliber of a DJ Wagner was Samardo Samuels back in 2008. So, like, we haven't done this in a long time. So maybe this is going to be a nice reminder that if you land a player that has this much buzz coming out of high school, it's a game changer for your program. That could, again, lead to you getting even more of them. So I thought I was going to – Milt Wagner as a coach – he joined the staff at Memphis in 2000. According to what I'm reading here, he'd not been a coach like at a college at any level until then. He became the director of basketball operations and a video coordinator. And, of course, that led to Memphis and Cal landing Dewan Wagner. After that, from 2006 to 2010, he was an assistant at UTEP. And from 2010 to 2014, he was an assistant at Auburn. So he coached alongside Tony Barbie for 8 years as an assistant coach. So it's not as if both things can be true. It's not as if Milt's never been a head coach or never been a coach at all, and he's just a former player who's been hanging out in Louisville. And, you know, it's not like we're bringing some guy off the street who has no coaching experience at all. But it's also all right to admit we're doing this because of DJ. Like, can't we admit that? I know Kenny wouldn't like that, and I know Dewan Wagner said what he said, but let's not kid ourselves. Milt Wagner is being discussed about being on the staff because of DJ, and that's not even a slight at him. I don't think anybody takes it that way, but let's not kid ourselves. That's why this is even a discussion. But again, they feel confident they could land him even without Milt getting the job. I kind of feel like if Milt was going to be the third assistant, it would have already happened. But maybe I'm wrong. Again, Kenny likes to keep these things, you know, relatively quiet. All right, we'll try to get to this in the 9 o'clock hour, and I'm glad Tony Vannetti popped his head in here a moment ago and asked me if I saw this because it's going to get a lot of attention, and that is the recent comments from Notre Dame's athletic director, Swarbrick, where he basically said, yeah, he believes that it's inevitable that the Division I level of the NCAA will have a seismic change by the mid – he put a date out there. Mid-2030s is when he thinks we're just going to see it become like mini NFL, mini NBA leagues where – you know, the high-profile programs really distance themselves and create their own level outside of, you know, schools like Bellarmine and the smaller schools. So I think that's going to happen too. I mean, again, we can get into it in the 9 o'clock hour, but what's going to happen with NIL and the portal, this is still all relatively new. In fact, really, this is the first normal offseason where you knew this was a thing, right? Like, this all came together quickly last year at the last minute, where guys could transfer and play right away, and guys could get name, image, and likeness money. So once we get into like a full decade of this being a thing, it's going to be pro sports. It is. I mean, some would say that it already is. And I guess you're right, because again, it's happening now. We just talked about it. Miami just paid a kid that transferred from Kansas State $400,000 for two seasons. So it already is kind of pro sports. And I don't say that to sound critical. I love it. I love what it's doing. Now, if you're a fan of like an EKU or a Bellarmine or a Moorhead, I get it, because then you could kind of, you know, you wouldn't feel as, you know, you wouldn't be in the same level as those other schools that, of course, you may get to play when you're a 15 seed and they're a 2 seed. And you wouldn't get what we saw with St. Peter's and that great story. But I agree with Swarbrick. I think it's inevitable. I really do. All right, we got a quick timeout on the way here, and then we've got, we'll finish up the 8 o'clock hour, a loaded 9 o'clock hour as well. Headlines, we'll talk a little NBA, and we'll also get to the text line, 502-653-0790. That is the L&N Federal Credit Union text line. You are in the Red Zone. We're fueled by Thorns here on 790 KRD.
Yeah.
You're in the Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD, fueled by Thorntons. Share your thoughts on the LNN Federal Credit Union text line at 502-653-0790.
So I recently asked the question, and I don't really know if anybody gave me an answer, but like, are we still going through a pandemic? I was very fortunate, and I mean this, like, sincerely, it didn't impact me. I mean, I didn't like working from home, and it really was a bummer for my mental health. I learned a lot about myself during the quarantine whenever we had to work from home for over a year. But my point is, like, I feel bad complaining because a lot of people lost their jobs. Hell, some people lost loved ones because of COVID. So I haven't heard people complain about unemployment in a long time because I thought their unemployment had run out and they've all gotten jobs. Everybody is hiring. So I just, again, in my own bubble, I didn't know if that was still a thing. But check out this story about this guy from, I believe he's from Louisville. But this story is getting national attention. This guy named Rex Burton. He was one of the many people that filed for unemployment at the start of the pandemic here in Kentucky when everybody was doing it, and it was a complete mess. It was inexcusable how poorly, I mean, we'd never experienced what we experienced when the pandemic happened, right? Like a global pandemic. I mean, that happened once every 100 years. And look, 100 years ago, things were a lot different. So the system we had in place here in Kentucky for unemployment had never gone through what happened. So clearly they couldn't handle it. And there were a lot of people who couldn't get in touch with anybody. They never got any money. I mean, hell, there was some kind of, I mean, hell, there were some people that didn't lose their jobs, but they later found out somebody claimed unemployment under their name and got checks. Like, it was a mess of a situation. So this story, this should tell you, if you know that you were entitled to unemployment and you never got it, keep fighting. Because 2 years after initially trying to get unemployment, this guy is now about to get $48,000 in back pay. And what I don't know, I read this story was on WHS 11, and I'm trying to see if, like, I don't know if he has another job yet, but, like, I can't imagine if I just was randomly going to get $48,000 in back pay. Because this guy's been fighting, so clearly good on him. But it says here that he's 39 years old. The delivery company that he worked for shut down at the beginning of the pandemic, so over the better part of the next 2 years, he'd been trying to get unemployment and had no luck. You know, he called like everybody else did, couldn't get through, waited for hours. He did finally reach somebody, and during a 15-minute conversation, the specialists let him know that there was a mistake made on unemployment's end and that he needed to speak with, you know, the supervisor of that guy that he was talking to. And then finally, he got the email that said payments were going to be released and he was going to get all that money coming back, which apparently it turned out he had a suspended driver's license. So they told him he couldn't technically process his unemployment because of that. And it, I guess what they were supposed to do was give him a state issued photo ID that, you know, showed who he was. But he didn't need a driver's license. He just needed to, I guess, legally identify himself through a state issued identification. And that's what led to this, there's probably still people listening right now. I'm not even joking, because I know a lot of people that were like, I tried to get unemployment. I never did. Never got it. Eventually, I went back to work, or eventually I got another job. But there's so many people that were technically entitled to this unemployment that everybody else was getting. I shouldn't say everybody else, because, again, there were a lot of people that did get it, probably got more than they really should have, probably got it for longer than they should have. And then there were others that just, the system failed him. So this guy's going to get $48,000 back 2 years later. And good for him. Good for him. His advice to many others is, which according to the Labor Cabinet was still around. This is insane. Check this out. 96,000 claims as of earlier this month have still not been resolved as far as people who filed for unemployment in Kentucky. That doesn't seem real. How is that possible? Yes, yeah, as of April 6th, there are 96,000 claims that keep pushing for resolution that I guess are trying to get this back pay. His advice, his quote is, if you've given up, try again, keep trying, and don't stop because they owe you money. And he's right. So I like that story, because when it reminded me of how fortunate I was to really be able to, you know, get through that, whereas others weren't so lucky. They lost their jobs, have made career changes, or again, even worse, they've lost a loved one due to the virus. So anyways, because everything to me is so much back to normal. I mean, hell, the one thing that really stood out to me was that we don't have to wear masks in airports anymore. Like, where else are you? I guess there's certain places you maybe still be required to do it, like medical offices and whatnot. But because things have gone back to normal for me, I kind of forget all about it, which is kind of the way I want to think about it because it was awful. All right, we got another hour to go. Stick with us. We'll reset this conversation that came up here just a moment ago, the comments from Notre Dame athletic director about high-level college athletics essentially departing from the rest of D1. And I think he's right. I do think it is inevitable, but like when it happens, that's what we can discuss. Also got headlines coming up. We'll empty out this LMN Federal Credit Union text line. Again, you are in the Red Zone. We're fueled by Thorns here on 790 KRD.
You're in the Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD, fueled by Thorntons.
That's right. You are in the Red Zone here on 790 KRD, and we are fueled by Thorntons. It is hour number three. Nick Coffey, that's me, the marvelous Matt Allen alongside today. I just realized the NFL draft is in a few days, and I'm excited about that. I love the draft. And like a lot of events, sporting events, even the event we had here in Louisville over the weekend, Thunder over Louisville, like we're back to normal in a lot of things for the first time since 2019. So the NFL draft, I know they had one 2 years ago where Roger Goodell announced every pick in the first couple rounds from his house, which I actually thought that was kind of cool. And then, of course, last year, I don't really remember the specifics of the draft. I know it was more normal than what we had in 2020, but it will be just like old times on Thursday night in the NFL draft. And you all don't care about my Colts. I'm a Colts fan. Obviously, this is not a big year for quarterbacks. There's going to be quarterbacks taken because teams always feel like they see something. But, like, realistically speaking, I don't think there's a quarterback. I mean, again, Tom Brady was a sixth-round pick. Look at him now. So, again, there's always guys that end up being better than you expected. But this just, to me, seems like the weakest quarterback class in the NFL draft that we've had in a long, long time. Maybe Malik Willis ends up being really good. Maybe the kid from Louisville, Desmond Ridder, ends up being really good. We'll see. But there's just not a whole lot of buzz about quarterbacks right now. And I can't wait to see the updated line on FanDuel Sportsbook as far as what the total is set at. Because I'm leaning on taking the under. Actually, I go back and forth. I'm actually leaning on the over as well because, again, NFL teams can't help themselves. They see a quarterback that impresses them. And quarterback is an extremely important position, but there'll be somebody that takes a swing on a guy that's probably a big risk just because they can't help themselves. They want to take a quarterback. Well, my Colts need a quarterback. They've got Matt Ryan, who they traded for, and I'm fine with that. I don't know how much he's got left in the tank. He did win MVP within the last 5 years or so, so it's not like this guy's completely washed up, but he's not your future. He's old. And look, he might stink this year. We don't know. But I want my Colts to take Bailey Zappe, the Western Kentucky kid. I don't mean take him with your first pick that you have, but if you're going to get a quarterback later in the draft, which I'm not sure if he's going to be available, he's starting to get some buzz, but I think he's really good. He was at Western Kentucky for one season, broke all the records that were set by guys like Colt Brennan many, many years ago, had a really, really good Senior Bowl, so I'm nerding out for the draft. I love the NFL draft. So, again, we can talk more about that as we move forward throughout the week here. But if you are just now joining us, we did talk about the news yesterday. Kenny Payne landing the first commitment since he's been hired as the head coach at Louisville. It is Brandon Huntley Hatfield, a former five-star big man who had offers from just about everybody coming out of high school a year ago out of Clarksville, Tennessee. Ended up choosing to stay home at Tennessee, played for Rick Barnes for one season, and I don't really know why I'm pulling up his game log here because, people are sharing, and again, you can always find one highlight that makes a kid look good. I mean, hell, you could piece together a highlight reel of a guy who barely ever played, but, you can make it look like he was an All-American. So I get it. Highlights can be a little misleading, but I remember watching Tennessee play, and he played in the games I watched. And I feel like he had a pretty good freshman season, but his numbers are a little underwhelming. He averaged 4 points and 3 rebounds a game, and he played only 12 and a half minutes per game, which I guess that's not bad for that kind. That production's not that bad given the amount of minutes that he got. But, yeah, he played well against Kentucky in the SEC tournament, ended up having 8 points and six boards in 22 minutes in that game, and had double figures, in fact, in the other in the quarterfinal game for Tennessee in the SEC tournament. So, yeah, you're going to hear people say, well, man, they're taking a guy who had all the hype coming out of high school, and after 1 year at Tennessee, maybe he was a bust. No, I mean, I guess he could be. We'll never know, but I'm not as worried about that. I think Kenny Payne, I mean, I think this guy has a lot of potential, and you can even see the upside that he has in the clips of watching him play when he was at Tennessee. So other big-time schools wanted him when he entered the portal, and Louisville got him. So job well done by Kenny Payne. You're clearly loaded in the front court right now, so you got to go get guards. But as we talked about this morning, they're still going after talent. Julian Phillips, the number 12 player in America, the best player, number one. He's the highest ranked player in the 2022 class that is not committed to a school just yet. He was committed to LSU, decommitted when Will Wade got fired, and he said over the weekend that Louisville was in to see him last week. Now, again, he's the best available player, so therefore there's a lot of competition for him. But that said, not everybody has scholarships to use, right? A lot of teams out there have already completed. They're full. They know who's on their team. They don't have – I mean, Louisville's got five open spots. So that's just a name to keep an eye on. I won't act like I have any insight into his recruitment, but I thought that piece of news kind of just slipped through the cracks over the weekend. This is the number one player available in the 2022 class that is going to be a freshman this upcoming season, and he listed Louisville as one of five schools that was in to see him a week ago. So just keep that on your radar. But yeah, Brandon Huntley Hatfield, the first commit for Kenny Payne. Somebody asked earlier who was the first commit for Chris Mack. I'm pretty sure the first commitment he got was a transfer, and it was Kristen Cunningham, if I remember correctly. Now, the first kid to commit to him, because, yeah, Louisville didn't bring in a single freshman when Matt got hired. They had, of course, Romeo and Courtney. I'm sorry, not Romeo. They were going after Romeo, and I still think Louisville had a decent shot at him before Rick got fired. But they had Courtney Ramey and... who's the kid that plays for the Blazers? It's going to drive me crazy, and I'm sure somebody's going to send it in on the text line. But Anthony Simons, yeah. They had those two guys committed, and then, of course, both decommitted when Rick got fired, and Mack did not sign a freshman in that initial offseason when he got hired. But the first guy to commit to him after that was Josh Nickelberry, if I remember correctly. So we'll see who the first high school kid is to commit to Louisville. My guess is that it's Devin Ree. So also, that's another thing to update you guys on. He is another former LSU commitment that visited Louisville last week, and he's going to make his decision on May the 2nd. So Mississippi native, played at Oak Hill. It sounds like he's down to Auburn, Georgia, Texas, and Texas A&M. But folks I've talked to feel really good about this kid. I kind of think he's silently committed. I could be wrong about that. That's the vibe I get. So if that ends up not playing out and he commits elsewhere on May 2nd, I will say that I was wrong. But the way it was described to me is that Devin Ree is coming to Louisville. It's just he's waiting to make his announcement. So he could be the first commit to join the Louisville-led Kenny Payne era. All right, 502-653-0790 is the number if you guys would like to text in. No surprise, the DJ Wagner recruitment continues to be a big talking point, not only for me, but from you guys as well. His recruitment will be, I think, a very memorable thing within this rivalry. And somebody asked the question earlier, who has more pressure? And I still think no matter what, Calipari has pressure because this is what he's supposed to do. This guy was believed to be a lock for Louisville a lock for Kentucky for forever, right? Since before he even entered the scene as far as like a highly ranked player. I mean, he's the number one player in America in the 2023 class, and we all know the connection. DeJuan Wagner, his father, played for Calipari, and they're like family. So it's just been assumed forever that Wagner would go to Kentucky. Well, now Louisville is in the mix here. And look, there's other schools too. I should mention that. But let's be real. It's going to come down to Louisville and Kentucky, right? Can't imagine that it doesn't, but he is hearing from just about everybody. I did find it funny because this is one of those guys. He's the number one player in America, so literally he can go wherever he wants. Like, there's no school that wouldn't take him. But when he was giving an update on his recruitment over the weekend, when talking to Jody Demling and those guys that were there covering it, he didn't even really know if he had an offer. Like, he does, but he like he's such a highly ranked player that, like, do you really even need to give the formal offer? Like, you should just, you know, you can go anywhere. But this is what he had to say after putting up 25 points on Friday night when asked about his recruiting, about the recruitment process within the state of Kentucky between Louisville and Kentucky. He said, quote, "I'm not really aware of it. I really don't know anything about it. I'm just playing ball. I'm just happy to be out there." And this kid has said those kind of things every time he's asked about his recruitment. And quote, this one says, I'm reading here from Jody Dimling's article at 24/7 Sports. It says, when a reporter said to him that some believe he is the biggest recruiting battle in the history of the state, Wagner responded asking, "Really? Like I said, it's just an honor to be recruited by any school. Those are two big schools there." So he's saying all the right things. He's not tipping his cap. And that's what he should do. But he also mentions Villanova, Memphis, Arkansas, Michigan, Syracuse, Auburn as schools that are going after him. And this is the quote that it's not a long quote. It's a short quote, but it's got to make you feel good. Because when asked about it at the Final Four, DJ Wagner acknowledged knowing Kenny Payne, but he acted as if Louisville hadn't really even started recruiting him yet. Now, keep in mind, at the time of the Final Four, Kenny Payne had just gotten the job. So he probably hadn't actively started recruiting him. Now, that's changed. They've got Nolan Smith. They've got Danny Manning. They're all in the pursuit of DJ Wagner. They were there watching him in Indy on Friday night. Assistant coaches were also there over the weekend. He did not play on Sunday, and I assume it's because of a situation that happened after one of his games. He got into what seems to be a fist fight, and I don't know any context to that, but the video did leak out on Twitter. So if you hear about a video of DJ Wagner getting in a fight or see a video of him, apparently that is real, and I don't have a clue what it was about. But I also think that's why he did not play with his team on Sunday up there in Indy. But here's the quote, DJ Wagner on Kenny Payne. Quote, "That's like family. We have always been family since I was young." Again, a short quote, but that's the kind of stuff you want to hear that makes you feel even better. You've got national recruiting analysts that are starting to flip their predictions. They think he's not coming to Louisville. The young man's calling Kenny Payne family, saying they've been family since he's young. Louisville's in good shape. But again, I am not counting out John Calipari for this kid because of the decades-long. I mean, DeJuan Wagner's like a second son. I guess I should put it this way. Calipari's like a second father to DeJuan Wagner. That's a bond that's really, really strong. Has been forever since DJ Wagner. Hell, since before DJ Wagner was born, he and Calipari were like family. So I'm not giving a prediction one way or the other, but I think if they hire Milt Wagner, it just doesn't seem real that he would go to Kentucky with his grandpa being hired on the staff at Louisville. But I guess it could happen. So when it comes back, you know, to go back to the question about who's got the most pressure, if Louisville lands, or if Louisville hires Milt, I do think the pressure is more so on. But maybe I'm wrong. Maybe it's still just Calipari because again he was supposed to get this kid for so long. But if you're Kentucky, and they're already doing it, by the way, like those that cover Kentucky in recruiting, they're not saying that DJ Wagner's overrated. They're not saying, well, we didn't want him anyway, but they're already starting to tell themselves, well, you know what? Like, he might end up actually being ranked number three in this class, number four when it's all said and done. And that's predictable because, again, they probably don't feel as confident about getting him as they once did. But I'm not counting him out. I know that's an unpopular opinion to share on this show because, you know, of the obvious reason, but I'm still in 100% belief that they're that even if Milt's on staff, I just, again, hard to imagine Louisville hiring Milt and then him going to Kentucky. But I guess it's possible, right? All right, 502-653-0790 is the number if you guys would like to text in on the LNN Federal Credit Union text line. You can also get in touch on Twitter at the Card Connect and at 790KRD. And if you want to send me an email, that is an option as well. Nick@790KRD.com. That is the email address. One more quick thing here on DJ Wagner before we move on to something else, because those that are critical of the thought of hiring Milt just to land one player, and I'll be honest with you, I'm not hearing many people, but there are some that say, geez, do we want to bring back a guy who hasn't been coaching in the college game in nearly a decade just to get one player? And my answer to that question every single time is yes, yes, yes. And they may not even need to hire Milt to get DJ. But DJ Wagner is the kind of player that if it works out and he has success and he goes on to the NBA, you could end up getting more DJ Wagners, right? He has the ability to give your program some buzz you just haven't had in a while. I mean, even when Louisville won a title in 2013, made a Final Four in 2012, I mean, they had that great run there that was from, I know they lost early in tournament, but they had a great run there from like 2011 to about 2016, where they were one of the best programs consistently for that entire timeline, right? But they didn't do it with players like DJ Wagner. They didn't need to. Like, Rick had his own formula. Vannetti stopped in earlier, and he was like, Louisville landed this kid from Tennessee who was a five-star, top 20-ish player in Brandon Huntley Hatfield. He was like, why has it been so long since Louisville's been in the mix for a guy this good? And I just think with Rick Pitino, Rick's coaching style, and I guess, and Glenn, again, his style works. I think right now, Rick Pitino, even though he's at Iona, you could make the case, and it's not hard to make the case, he's the best coach in college basketball with his resume. So it worked. But top 10-ish players just never, they didn't, I mean, he went after him. He probably wanted him, but he just didn't get him. And it wasn't a compatible fit with the way he coaches. And a lot of the guys he got that were five stars, he got some that worked out and had success, but then he had some like a Shaquan Aaron and I feel like there was another one that he got, that VJ King, they were kind of broken. So Rick had a formula. Go out and land four top 60-ish players, and those and that works, and it did. Like the last time Louisville was even involved in a recruit that is highly thought of like Wagner, it's Smarto Samuels. I mean, he was the number one player in America, I believe, in 2008. Now, another comment that's been made here and there, and it's fair, is we gave Chris Mack all these excuses and said it's just so hard for him to recruit. Well, Kenny Payne hadn't landed a recruit yet, but he's at least involved with some of the bigger names available. And he also, you know, just landed a transfer that was won by everybody else. The caliber transfer that, you know, Chris Mack wasn't landing. And we don't need to make this about Chris Mack, but yeah, we probably did. You guys call me out on it all the time, thought I was too nice to Chris Mack and I wasn't critical enough, and that's fine if you believe that. But yeah, we probably shouldn't have given him so many excuses about his inability to bring in elite talent. I'm sure the NCAA situation, in fact, I know it didn't help them, but Kenny Payne doesn't seem to be having any trouble with that right now. That doesn't even come up. I mean, I'm sure the recruits they're talking to ask about it, but yeah, like that's, I mean, I think Louisville fans all know that here soon, but probably by the end of the calendar year, we'll get our fate. We'll know our fate with the IRP, and we just want closure. At least I do. Like, we know it's still happening, but it never comes up anymore. Like, whenever we hear about DJ Wagner, or we hear about this Julian Phillips kid, or Devin Ree, who is another guy they're going after from the freshman class, like, I've not heard anybody mention, yeah, Louisville's in good shape, but they may not get him because of the NCAA punishment. Like, nobody brings that up anymore because I think Kenny is believed to be such a good recruiter that it really won't matter. So, we'll see. All right. So, Notre Dame's AD, Jack Swarbrick, you're probably going to hear a lot about him today on different shows and just people who cover college athletics because his comments are a big deal. But here's the headline from Pat Forty's column at Sports Illustrated. With the NCAA embroiled in chaos, Notre Dame's Swarbrick calls Division I breakup inevitable. And let me see if I can find the actual quote here. He says, there's always been sort of a spectrum, and I want to stress that everything along the spectrum is valid. It's not a criticism. On one end of the spectrum, you license the school name and run an independent business that's engaged in sports. The other end of the spectrum, you're integrated into the university in terms of decision-making and requirements, and some follow that. Quote, I think both can produce great athletic competition, but it's really hard to get there given the contractual obligations that already exist. It says, absent a national standard, which I don't see coming, I think it's inevitable, mid-30s would be the logical time. And that is sort of a breakup where the SEC, the ACC, the Big Ten, Pac-12, the Big 12, and maybe the Big East in basketball, maybe the independents like Notre Dame, like where they just kind of create their own division of college sports. And he's right. They're two complete, like, you, these, the Bellarmines and the U of L's are not relatable at all. At all. And we've all known that. And I don't, like, I'm not calling, if it stays the way it is now, I'm fine with it. I've loved college athletics since I can remember. I'm not going to change. If it stays the way it is, I'm going to be fine. But I also understand exactly what he's saying. Like, we can't treat these schools like they're equal level. They're not. And again, he described it there in the quote. You're essentially running your athletic department like a pro franchise at places like Notre Dame, places like Kentucky and Louisville. And it's going to become even more, like, it's not amateur athletics. It really hasn't been for quite some time. But that's going to be a whole new level of that now that NIL is here. And we just talked about it earlier. It's now public. Kansas State transfer Nigel Pack just took a two-year, $800,000 deal to go play at Miami. They bought a player. He was a free agent. He got a contract. It's not, you know, based off of performance or pay for play, but it is. You know what I mean? So once that becomes the norm where we know, like, every guy we're watching is on a two-year, three-year deal and he's making $500,000 or $250,000, and we know this five-star recruit, he ended up signing with Bama, and this is what he got. Like, it's going to be even more ridiculous how unrelatable the two sides of this spectrum are that Swarbrick's talking about. And again, that doesn't mean you have to separate, but you probably will. And yes, things we've come to love will no longer be. Like, the NCAA tournament would clearly be much different if it only featured, you know, the non-Power 5, Power 6s. But I agree. I think it's inevitable. I really do. Keep in mind, this is all brand new. NIL and the portal. Again, NIL has given us guys getting paid big money to stick around in college and not go pro. And then the portal has essentially given us free agency. And I think it's made college athletics a lot more entertaining to watch year-round. But clearly, it's becoming more of a pro game than it is college. And it really has been for a while. This is just going to speed it up in a major way. Let me tell you what I'm looking forward to in a major way. That's the Fast Five Headlines with the marvelous Matt Allen coming up next.
You're in the Red Zone with Nick Coffey on 790 KRD, fueled by Thorntons. Share your thoughts on the LNN Federal Credit Union text line at 502-653-0790.
If you're looking for more examples of how NIL is going to make the product of college basketball better with better players sticking around, it's happening every time I refresh Twitter. I think it was Hunter Dickinson of Michigan, who announced he's coming back to play for Juwan Howard again. And then the two guards that led Carolina to a title game. Oh, sorry. There we go. Worked out perfectly.
It's time for the Fast Five Headlines with the marvelous Matt Allen.
Number one.
What were you going to say about...
To be fair, I didn't know if you'd have it in there or not. It would not surprise me if you didn't, but it also doesn't surprise me that you do. So we're on the same page. Without even knowing it, we're on the same page.
We're starting...
We can start elsewhere.
We're starting there, but give it a minute. From the leaving and going department, after winning a national championship and playing his way into a first-round NBA prospect, Oche Igbaji is taking the next step. The Kansas guard and Final Four's MOP announced he is declaring for the NBA draft Sunday. No matter where basketball takes me, I'll always be a Jayhawk. Okay. He's a senior guard. He averaged 18 points, 5 boards, while shooting 40% from 3 last year. He does forego an extra year of eligibility because of the COVID-19 pandemic. He averaged 16 points while connecting on 7 of 11 threes in Final Four wins over Villanova and North Carolina. So he is gone. Who is not gone is Caleb Love. He is going to return to North Carolina. And it completes a 12-day stretch in which Armando Bacot, Leaky Black, RJ Davis, and Love, 4 starters from the team that just played in the national championship game all announced they're coming back to Chapel Hill. So Kansas loses one. North Carolina apparently is keeping four.
Yep. Carolina, the only guy they lost to that starting five was Brady Manick, who just ran out of eligibility. I think he was already a fifth-year senior. So they're going to be really good. And what really changed for them is the guard play just got – and there's always teams that get hot. Like, for example, UCLA last season was the team that barely got in the tournament, played in to get in, and made it all the way to the Final Four. And they followed up that season with a good one, but they did end up losing to that Carolina team. And Carolina wasn't on the bubble necessarily. They barely got in. They were like an 8 seed, so it's not as if they were one of the last teams to get in. But nonetheless, they turned into a different team in the tournament when Davis and Love really turned it on. And those guys were good throughout the year. They were just inconsistent. And then they played really well. And I still can't – I mean, if you're Carolina, I'm curious how you – you know, you made the surprise run to the title game. And you beat K in the Final Four. Like, that's such a win for you as a fan that it's like you really don't feel that bad about losing in the championship game. But you also had a 15-point lead at halftime and let it slip away. But, hey, you got really that same team back next year. They're probably going to go portaling and add even more talent. So, yeah, I would very much so.
Go Cards, go portaling?
There you go.
Okay.
I would very much expect Carolina to be number one in the preseason, and I can't say that I disagree. Number two.
From the When Reggie Talks, Nick Listens department.
You're damn right.
Multiple reports. We actually said this. We actually asked the question last week, and now it's been answered. If the Nets go down 3-0 in this series, and Ben Simmons, who's been saying all along he's going to be back for Game 4, maybe Game 5, probably Game 4 for the Nets, but if they're down 3-0, will he play? The answer, nah. Ben Simmons has been ruled out for Game 4 of the Nets' first-round playoff series against the Celtics. The Woj reported that Simmons woke up with back soreness on Sunday after participating in basketball activities on Saturday, and that he and the Nets collectively decided he would remain sidelined on Monday. He hasn't played in an NBA game since the Sixers were eliminated in the second round of last season's playoffs by the Hawks. Of course, traded for James Harden to the Sixers, and the Nets lost to the Celtics Saturday. And now Boston leads that series 3-0. Reggie Miller had this to say about Ben Simmons, I guess, decision. But it's the Ben Simmons and Nets collectively, Reggie. Quote, come on, man. Out for Game 4 when it was rumored you were going to make your debut. This dude has zero competitive fire. As small a chance as the Nets have to come back in this series, you still have KD and Kyrie. All you need is to win one game and take it from there. Hashtag man up.
Love
it. Do you agree with Reggie? Of course you do.
I do. And I would, you know, we'll never know. But yeah, like you said, it's a joint decision. But why, if you're Brooklyn and he can play, why would you not play him knowing it's win or go home? Like, so it's probably his camp, his people. He's coddled and babied, and it's annoying. You know, I totally agree with Reggie. It could have been anybody that said it, and I would agree. But that is something, and this is probably like the most old man get off my lawn take that I have on basketball and in the NBA. And I felt this way for a while, and it really stood out when I watched The Last Dance. And it's not just because Jordan. Look, Jordan's an all-time great. Jordan may be one of the best competitors in the history of sports. Not just best athlete, best basketball player of all time. He was a competitor to his core, and to this day still is. I mean, he's wired differently than most. But there was a competitive level in the NBA in that era that was awesome. And now you got guys that are, you know, they're too cool to actually call anything a rivalry within the NBA. And I don't think they have that same competitive fire that we saw in the previous era. And that's not to say that you know, that makes this era not as good as the previous one, but that's something from a fan's perspective. Maybe I was just more into it as a kid, so I noticed it, but like, you can tell those teams didn't like each other in the 90s, and it was personal, and it was like the thought of guys not playing, the guys playing with a, again, the more I talk, the more I sound like an old man. But I mean, there are guys that were of Ben Simmons caliber in the 90s, meaning like a perennial all-star, that they'd have to have a broken limb to not play. And he's different. But Reggie, yes, anything Reggie says, I agree with.
But let's not just ask Reggie. There are more guys on TNT. Let's see what the guys behind the desk think about Ben not playing.
Reggie is absolutely correct. In the hood, you're right, Chuck. Call this a punk move. You know, when things are going good, yeah, I'm going to play in game four. Chuck said it. You could have played on Saturday, you could have played on Monday. Now that they lost, my back hurt. Well, if your back hurt, get some icy hot obscenity. We call this a punk move. Listen, if you're not ready to play, you would get more respect from the people if you just say, I'm not ready to play, and don't say nothing else. Don't be shooting and saying, I'm coming back, I'm going to do this. That was a punk move. Reggie's absolutely right. If you're not going to play, don't say you're going to play. I think you should play. You
know, let me say this. First of all, go ahead.
I think you should step up to the challenge and try to help your team win. But nope. He went, the punk move, right? Oh, I'm not going to play, my back hurt. But we all know what that is. Ballers know what that is. You know, everybody else could be, oh, he's not ready. But us guys that live this life, we know exactly what you're doing, buddy.
First of all, I knew he wasn't going to play after they lost Saturday. He was not going to play. First of all, there's no need. We said already said it'd be crazy to put him back in this environment. So I didn't think he should have played anyway. But if he wasn't going to play Saturday when they were down 2-0, there's no need to bring him back when they're down 3-0. So I personally think he should have tried to play
in game three.
Because Saturday to Monday, you should, like, that's only a little small window. But if you go back and look at that Toronto game.
They edited this up better on Facebook, but Chuck was talking about the difference, and I thought the good point was, he said, you know, you can lose the fans, but I think that he thinks that Ben Simmons has lost the respect of the players. And that's a big deal.
Of course.
That's a much bigger deal than the players. And I this was a much longer clip, and they cut that to get better together on Facebook, but my Facebook won't play. So, but I thought that was an interesting point that Chuck added that we didn't get to hear, but that he thinks that Ben is getting close to losing the respect of the players the way he's
I don't know how
acting.
He couldn't have. I mean, he clearly didn't have the respect from his teammates in Philadelphia towards the end. And yeah, I mean, I've never been in an NBA locker room, never played in the NBA, but I feel like there's a lot of respect within the competitive nature of the league, and this guy seems like a guy who doesn't want to compete. And if I'm an NBA player, I wouldn't want that guy on my team that's not willing to compete when called upon, and that's clearly what's happening with Ben Simmons. Ben Simmons is like, to me, he's got a little bit of an RBF, but he's like a villain, isn't he? He's never done anything. He doesn't talk a lot of trash. He's not like a dirty player. But he just seems like one of the more unpopular people in sports. And I'm curious if there's something missing that I don't know about him. Because apparently there was a documentary that he did, I think on HBO years ago, about the one and done. And apparently that made him seem like a real not-so-likable guy. But, yeah, he's not exactly gaining any more popularity with this move. Number three.
By the way, just as an addendum, tonight, 7 o'clock, that game, TNT, Boston up 3-0, followed by 8 p.m. NBA TV Game 5 of Raptors-Sixers, and 9:30, big Game 5, tied 2-2, Utah and Dallas on TNT at 9:30. Going back to that 8:30 game from the you-know-who-is-playing department, number 4 overall selection in the 2021 draft is your NBA Kia Rookie of the Year, Scotty Barnes. Toronto picked him with the 4 pick, choosing the Florida State product over Gonzaga's Jalen Suggs. Barnes went on to start 74 games, averaged 15 points, 7 boards, 3 assists. He led all rookies in minutes this year, was among top 3 of rookies in points and rebounds per games. And he was also a big key to the Raptors' defense, which was a top 10 unit. He did beat out all 3 players picked ahead of him. Cavs center Evan Mobley came in second with just 5 fewer first-place votes. Pistons guard Cade Cunningham and Rockets guard Jalen Green came in third and fourth for Rookie of the Year.
Yeah, Scotty Barnes going number four was, I think, if I remember correctly, Suggs was such a big deal in the tournament last year and had such a phenomenal season that I think the Raptors were criticized for taking Barnes over Suggs. And look, I don't – did Suggs – I could be wrong, but I don't think – he plays for the Magic. So, again, they may be the team that, that no one pays attention to. But, yeah, he had an up-and-down rookie season, to put it mildly. So, yeah, Scotty Barnes, pick number four for the Raptors. So far, looks like a wise investment on their end. Number four.
Four walls to hear me.
From the Don't Get Used to This department, it's not a great call, but it could be the last time we hear something like this for a very, very long time. It's hit number 3,000 for Tigers' Miguel Cabrera.
Right side, there it is! His 3,000th, the third Tiger to ever do it.
One of only 33 players to ever do it, the third Tiger to ever do it. Miguel Cabrera, his 3,000th hit in the major leagues, and he's the first one to do it, actually, in, let's see, 4 years, I believe. And now the, where's it at? And now I've lost the page, so I'll have to pull that up while I'm talking about it. But he is the first hitter to do it since Albert Pujols reached his 3,000th hit in 2018. So it's been 4 years since someone has done that. He has also has a another great mark in his career. He's just one of three players in Major League history, along with Hank Aaron and Willie Mays. Hello. With at least 3,000 hits, 500 home runs, and a .300 batting average. But it's been 4 years since someone hit 3,000. And if you take a look at who might be the next player in Major League history to hit 3,000, it may be longer than 4 years. The closest player is Robinson Cano, who's less than 400 hits away at 2,631. But he was forced to miss the entire last season with the second positive PED test, and now he'll need a few more seasons as a full-time player to have a shot at 3,000. He's 39 years old, and he's only under contract through next year, and he's not playing well this year. There's only two other players playing now with over 2,000 hits, and that's Yadier Molina for the Cardinals, who's retiring this year, and noted other 39-year-old Joey Votto for the Reds, who has 2,035 hits. So he'd need 965 more hits, and he's 39 as well.
That's old, right?
That is old. There are 13 players who have at least 1,500 hits, but the youngest of those are Jose Altuve, Freddie Freeman, and Eric Hosmer, who are all 32, and they have more than 1,000 hits each left to reach that mark. So if none of them do it, it could be quite some time before we see another major leaguer hit 3,000 hits.
We don't have time for number five, do we?
No.
Thank you, Matt. All right, so I heard this on a national show over the weekend, and I'm totally stealing it. I thought it was a really good way to use the little time we have usually at the end of each show. So I'm going to give you some celebrity birthdays, Matt. Take a guess if you can guess their age. Tim Duncan has a birthday. How old do you think Tim Duncan is?
50.
Close. 46. How about Al Pacino?
81.
Nice. 82. That was really close. What about Hank Arazia? Am I saying that right?
Hank Azaria?
Yeah. How old do you think he is?
52.
58. Looks good for 58, I
yeah.
think. Last one, Renee Zellweger. How old do you think she is?
48.
53.
Okay.
There you go. Let me try that. Just to
celebs doing good job because I'm guessing younger yeah. than they are.
That's right. All right, you guys have a good day. I think the rain's on its way, so that stinks. But again, have a good one. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Be sure to check out the podcast if you missed anything. And we're back at it bright and early tomorrow morning. And hopefully you'll join us right here in the Red Zone, fueled by Thornton's on 790 KRD.